Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? Welcome to the Around the World podcast. I'm your host, Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more in the Around the World podcast. For this episode of the podcast, I sat down to talk with Ronnie Rodriguez. He and his wife Hester traveled through Siberia and Mongolia and into China, which is where I met them. Currently, they're on their way to Southeast Asia, where they'll live for a few months and work on their website, theplanethero.com, which is all about helping other people as they travel. Ronnie and Hester are one of the few couples I've met who travel with a fully functional drone copter. I've seen some of their footage from Mongolia and China, and it is awesome. I also accompanied them on a flyover of Zhangjiajie, China, which is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. I can't wait to see the footage once it comes out. My talk with Ronnie went really well. He's a great speaker. He's got a lot of great stories to share. So let's get right to it and listen to my interview with Ronnie Rodriguez. We're here in Yangshuo, China. Beautiful place. I'm with Ronnie Rodriguez. He and his wife, Hester, they once lived in London. Maybe now it's kind of up in the air. I'm sure we'll talk about that a lot. And they are running a website called theplanethero.com. I'll give you guys a link to that in the show notes. And we met, it's been almost a week, hasn't it?
Yes, about a week. We met in Zhangjiajie, top of the mountain.
Yeah, another beautiful place in China there in Yangshuo. These are amazing landscapes. I've never seen anything like this. These karst pillar formations, giant mountains covered in green. We're sitting outside of a hotel right now at the edge of this beautiful little town of Yangshuo. And kind of a nice, peaceful, quiet place, which is definitely a rarity in China.
Definitely very rarely there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So thanks for coming on the show, Ronnie. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
No, thank you for the invitation. Actually, it's going to be a pleasure to, you know, spend time with you and just talk a little bit about our adventure and about our experience so far.
Absolutely. Well, let's start from the top. What's your trip all about? You're traveling around Asia, is that right?
Yeah, basically, my wife and I come up with this idea, and the whole idea of the trip is going to be 2 years. On the first year, we start from London, and we flew to Moscow, and we got a Trans-Siberian train all the way from Moscow to Beijing. We stopped quite a lot in Russia. And then we spent like almost a month in Mongolia before crossing the border to China. So the trip itself, we are planning going through Asia, and also China, and then Southeast Asia, and Nepal, India, and then doing sort of back to Southeast Asia with Malaysia, Indonesia, and Philippines. That would be for a year and a half traveling. After that, we are planning, hopefully we'll manage to get there. Let's see in about a year time. But the idea is like going to Australia, New Zealand, and then just popping on the Pacific Islands, and then going to Mexico. And from Mexico, going all the way to my hometown, which is Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, by bus. So we're going to do it like overland through Central America and the South America. We actually plan going to all the way to extremely south of America, and to Patagonia, and then back up to Rio de Janeiro.
Wow, that's an ambitious plan. That you think will be 2 years?
Yeah, we are planning to like in about 2 years and a half. So like could be a year or a year and a half, so like just Southeast Asia. I mean, till Australia, and then one more year doing Australia, New Zealand, and the Central America, South America.
Okay, yeah, wow, that's a lot of places. That's almost the whole world other than Africa, I guess, and Europe.
Yeah, it's pretty much. We're actually the only continent we're not going to be setting our foot on would be Africa at least by now. Basically, let me explain a little bit about our project.
Yeah, go ahead.
When we come back, if we come with this idea, traveling, we thought, I think the start point is, Hess and I used to have a very busy life in London. I work with films, I'm a visual effects artist, and Hess is a photographer artist. And we both got sucked by London busy, stressful routine where you wake up in the morning, you work so like 12 hours a day. In my case, work 12 hours a day in front of the computer in the dark room with no window. And I had my own private, my own projects going on. So by the time I get back home, I still have a lot of work to do, which means like I was working till very late in the evening and sleep a few hours and just repeating that over and over. And about a year ago, we are traveling in Malta during my birthday, and Hess lost her mother-in-law, her stepmother, and was happened very quickly. We didn't expect at all, and that shocked us very badly. I mean, it's like we didn't expect it there, and there was a big shock for us, and it just gave us a completely different perspective of life.
So that was kind of an inspiration for doing something new?
As well. I think that was the first click, to be honest, realize life is too short and too precious. And, you know, it's like if you spend too much time actually, you know, just working to make what the society tell you is the right path, which is make money and be rich and buy a house, and then life is finished, and you're not going to take a house with you. You're not going to take, so like, your money with you. And what is left? Nothing.
I guess you could have a huge mausoleum and, like, a giant house over you as you're in the ground dead.
Exactly, you know.
I've seen a few of those.
Exactly, you know. It's like, so because that's not possible, we just suppose like, just a second, I think we might just put in priorities in different, you know, just like put our priority in different place, you know. Maybe we just need think about our life and just like, you know, doing what we love. I mean, it's so like people have different tastes, and that people doesn't like to travel. I you know, I do think traveling, especially the way we are traveling, as a, you know, as a traveler, as a backpacker, is not for everyone. It's not everyone's cup of tea. You know, a lot of people just rather stay in the comfort of their house, and there's nothing wrong about that.
So yeah, like, yeah, the road is pretty rough for us.
It's very rough.
Whole days or couple days we were delayed. And,
exactly.
I mean,
you don't have a house. You don't have like a base. You don't have, you know, sometimes like it pay off, you know, like for example, yesterday we went for this beautiful walk on the top of the mountains, and we got there after half an hour, climb a very steep stairs, and the boom, beautiful landscape, end of the day, quiet and peace. It was like, and
amazing.
It's amazing. That gives you as a like, wow, actually that's worth it. But sometimes you get in this in the place full of backpacks. I mean, it's like my wife and I are traveling with all the equipments and all the video equipments. I'm going to talk about that soon.
Yeah,
but
sure.
We get to like, you know, so much stuff, and we get in the city, and we don't know anyone. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning. It's cold, and you don't know where you're going. And you know, you have so many backpacks and heavy stuff with you, and it's not comfortable. So it's not for everyone.
Oh, it can be tough. I mean, I've been in that situation too. Or like a bus arrives at 3-4 in the morning, and you don't want to like go to a hotel for 3 hours and then leave and pay for a whole day. So
not at all.
Sometimes you just sleep in the train station or bus station, whatever.
I remember when I crossed the border with China, that was in Jinan. So we left Mongolia, and the take consideration was like, you know, beginning of the winter in Mongolia. So it's like we left there was about -20. And we crossed
minus
the border.
-20 Celsius.
-20 Celsius.
Yeah, so what is that? -5 Fahrenheit, maybe?
Yeah, it's very cold. Cold.
Very cold. Yeah.
And we got in these train stations. Like we're supposed to do a connection to Datong. And we got in this train station, Jinan. Our first seat in China was like 4 o'clock in the morning. There was no one in the train station. It was very cold. There was like no place to sit. I mean, all the seats in China and the train station is very hard and very uncomfortable. And I remember I was very tired, and I just lie on the floor in the middle of the train station to wait for 4 hours to get to like another train to Datong. And I was freezing because obviously the floor was very cold as well, but I was very tired. So you kind of doing the balance, what you feel more. You're more tired or you're very cold? And you try kind of sleep half an hour and get up and, you know, move a little bit. And at that point was like, what am I doing? You
know? Yeah. Ah, we all go through those kind of decisions. And it's like, well, I could spring, you know, $50 for a hotel. And okay, I've got $50, but then I can't use that money later. And
exactly.
It's like, okay, I'm going to tough this one out. I'm not going to spend that
I'm
money.
I'm going to do it. I will do it.
Just have to wait here a few hours.
A few hours. And sometimes, like, you know, in this case, I think it was 4.5 hours in total. And it was like the longest 4.5 hours ever waiting for this very cold train station in the middle of nowhere. I could actually speak the language. It was my first experience in China. So it was like everything was a bit of shock. Mm. But once again, you know, you put like in question all you're doing, all the trip, and then you pay off with a beautiful view or with amazing people you meet, so like, you know, a simple beer on the lake.
Sure, like you didn't mention that hike we did yesterday.
Yes.
We were hiking in this little town just kind of along the shore of a river, and we were about to head back, got about to get a bus back to Yangshuo. And what happened?
Yeah, so basically, that was actually quite an interesting day. Was once again a surprise. I mean, it's like we went to this small town shipping, and it was amazing. We didn't have many plans there. I think, guys, the only plan we had previously was like to get in this viewpoint, where is the landscape of the 20 money, Chinese money.
20 yuan, yeah.
20 yuan.
Oh, the money, the actual bill, the 20 yuan bill has on the background this landscape,
the landscape, yeah,
of these beautiful mountains, and it happens to be in this town that we were just in.
Exactly. So basically our plan for the whole day was just going to this place, which was very close to the city itself, the town, and we did that quite, you know, quickly, and we had the rest of the day. We thought, yeah, we have plenty of time, and we stop in the place in the middle of nowhere to eat. We have the, like, you know, a lovely meal, and you know, it was only one in the restaurant, and we stayed like in this balcony, the terrace actually, but it was really relaxing. And then we decided to walk back very slowly to the city, and suddenly plans changed completely. I mean, it's like we got back in the town, and I bumped into someone I met in Beijing a month ago, and this girl was like staying in the city for the past 4 days, and she told me, she asked me, did you guys going up the hill, up the mountains, which have a beautiful view, and I didn't know about this place, and she just like recommended us to go in there because the view is breathtaking and it's very, very nice. Obviously, we checked like the time, and it was, you know, an hour before the sunset, so we literally just rush up the mountains, and we did this like in 25 minutes, half an hour. It was 8 of us, which make all the process a little bit more slower, you know. But we got there, and that was absolutely amazing view. Obviously, because we changed the plans, we ended up like going down in the darkness using our phone light. I mean, Dan was the only one who actually had torch. And
Boy Scouts, be prepared.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> And then we went down, and for the second surprise, which we missed the last bus back to Yangshuo. And it's a little bit more adventure, I would say. You know, give a little bit of conversation piece. Because we are walking the city, obviously the taxi driver knew there was no more bus, so he was trying to overcharge us about 300 yen to bring us back to Yangshuo, which is just 27 kilometers.
Which is a ridiculous price. It's totally, totally ridiculous.
And basically, so we just walk around the city, and we met like another Chinese group, and you know, suddenly the solution just appears, and we got to like, we squash inside the van, actually, you know, so a few people the top of orders, but we managed our way back to Yangshuo paying a fair price, I would say.
Yeah, we paid a fair amount. We got back into town and in time to have a couple beers before going to bed.
Yeah, that was great. Nice music, nice beers, and going to bed.
Absolutely, a wonderful day.
Happy days.
Yeah, and that view, man. You go up to the top of this karst rock formation. It's probably a couple hundred meters high. And you can see really far into the distance. There's these green mountains just dotting the landscape. They look like gumdrops all over the place, next to the Li River, which is this famous river in China. and they have bamboo rafts in the river, and there's these old guys who have really long, scraggly beards, and they wear the pointy hats, and they're still cormorant fishermen. They spend years, they train birds to go and catch fish for them, and they just hang out on these rafts waiting for the sun to go down, till the fish come up close to the surface, and they'll send the birds down soaring into the river to catch fish and bring them back to the guy, and then he can take them to the market and sell them or eat them.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
That was amazing. We forgot to tell, actually, you know, in the beginning of the day, yesterday, we actually went to the market as well. You know, so like once every 2 weeks, they make a farmer market in this small town called Fuling, on the way to Shipping. And I think it was the first time I actually experienced a proper Chinese market with no contamination of Western world or touristic thing. We got there with real Chinese where people are killing dogs and ducks. And
well, that was one sad thing we saw, a whole basket full of dog heads, severed dog heads.
Very sad, but also actually just, you know, shows a bit of the culture which is not common for us.
My wife
is vegetarian, and she's like an animal lover. That's why she gave up meat years and years ago. And it was a big shock for her. I mean, she was actually crying her eyes off
when seeing
all the ducks being killed. Because they killed the ducks and the chicken. And even the fish is a live fish. And they get this, like, you know, stick and just bang them in the head. And the ducks, they slot their neck and, you know, let them bleeding. So it's pretty tough. I think it's like, you know, it's a big culture shock for us from the Western world, seeing you have this contact, you know, with kind of root market in China.
Yeah, I loved it. I love going to places like that where it's really full on. I mean, the people in this market, you can tell they're the farmers. You know, they're short. They're small people. They've been through a lot in their lives.
Exactly.
Their faces are weathered and worn. You know, most of them are missing some teeth. I mean, I don't say this stuff to be disparaging. This is just how it is here.
They've lived some long,
difficult lives, but we got to see their lives in progress.
Exactly.
And not from a cleaned up, like, touristy standpoint. We're the only tourists there.
Exactly. I think that's the thing. I mean, China, it's such an amazing country, but it's like lots of places in China is being already contaminated by the tourist life. I mean, so like people change a bit their life and to adjust with the Western tourists, and you lose a little bit of the China essence.
Yeah. And China's changing so fast. There's not many places like this left. And it's not just it's really not the Western tourists that are changing. It's the Chinese tourists. As the people accumulate more wealth, there are the number of tourists from China that we meet are far outnumber the number of Western tourists that we meet.
Yeah.
So groups come from all around the country to places like this just to see the old way of life that really is almost a thing of the past. And you just find pockets of it in little towns like this nowadays.
Sure.
Really cool to see, though.
It is very cool to see. China's been surprising me quite a lot, you know. So, like, my expectations, I'm not going to say my expectation was low. I had the highest expectation for China, but it definitely is much better than I expect. I mean, we saw so much, and we've been experiencing so much. It's been absolutely amazing. And obviously, you have those, like, funny, curious things about China. For the fact you walk on the street and the people all the time stop you to take pictures of you. And
I
remember in Pingyao, you know, my wife and I were just cycling in the city. It was, like, a very nice ancient city. It's called Pingyao. And we rent a couple of bikes. And, you know, we didn't have destination. Just, like, you know, cycling around and get lost in the city and enjoying the day. And we had constantly asked to stop and take a picture of people. And at a certain point, we stopped the bikes to take some pictures. And when we realized, there was about like 20 people queuing up to take pictures of us.
No.
And there was like, guys, do I need to tell you? I'm not famous. I mean, I'm not Brad Pitt or anything. You know what I mean? You guys might be confusing me with someone else. I mean,
maybe they thought you were Brad Pitt.
No, maybe, because there was like 20 people around. And my wife, she's strawberry blonde. I mean, she's a little bit ginger, you know, the hair color. And people get like really fascinated by her hair color. So every single time she's like in a wait on the queue or something, people came from behind her and touch her hair, trying, you know, taking selfies and without askers, and it's quite interesting.
It is. I think if you're listening to this and you're not famous and you wonder what it's like to be famous, and just come to China.
It's true.
Especially if you're really tall or blonde or look out of the ordinary in
some
way.
It does give you a little bit of a hint of what being famous is. You know?
It is. It's like being a celebrity.
Yeah. I must be honest, there are other things that like really is going to be, it's going to be in my brain for a long time, in my memories. I mean, obviously the landscape, the food, the people, and people here are so nice all the time, even though you have like the language barrier. I mean, Danny speak Chinese. I can't speak at all. But even with the language barrier, it's like people are so nice and they try help you somehow. You know?
Oh, yeah.
But obviously there are other, you know, funny things. For example, Chinese toilet is not what we understand for toilet. It's really common you get in the place like bus station or train station. Basically, Chinese toilet is just a hole in the floor. They have a squat toilet. But you get in all those places, you have like a series of squat toilets, like 5, 6 of them, one beside another. There is no walls or no doors between them. And you get like the image we have when you first get in the toilet, it's like a bunch of Chinese squatting and in their phone, smoking cigarette and sharing the lighter, you know, and they are all, you know, in the private moment. So it's like for us it's quite a big of shock. So like, come on, I need a door here. I need this like
a little me privacy.
Time.
Yeah.
A bit of me time in this time, you know what I mean? In this moment.
Definitely. they'll talk to each other, smoke cigarettes. The cigarettes that's one spot where I actually like cigarette smoke is in the bathrooms.
Yeah, I kill a little bit the over
shit. Yeah. It's not so bad.
It's true, but it's like it's been amazing. So, what I was saying before, we just converted the conversation, I was talking about my project. So my wife and I had this loss a year ago back in Malta, and put things a little bit in perspective. We started, I'm not saying that's when we decide going to travel, but that's definitely when, we plant a seed. And that's when you first actually start to think life is not like that. I'm going to be sharing, I think, with you that now. I actually haven't told anyone about that now. But it's like a few months ago, my wife and I was trying to have kids. And she got pregnant. And she ended up losing the kid. And that's when we say, that's it.
Oh my
that's
God.
When we actually need to go in traveling. So that's when you actually change your complete plans and say, I think we had two options. One would be sad in the way, expecting, or we could change completely there and help people. So that's when you come up with the idea of Planet Hero. Planet Hero is not about just traveling. We are actually developing social projects along the way. So in Moscow, for example, we did a beautiful work with the homemade charity, and these guys, they doing such beautiful work with kids with Down syndrome and the special needs. And we are really lucky to meet them and spend some days with them and work with the kids. It was absolutely amazing. And then we work with kids again, once again in Mongolia, you know, so like with all the nomad families. So we had the experience to leave 10 days in the middle of the desert with nomad families and, playing with the kids and, teaching them English. And sometimes those projects, not just like, teach them English, but it's just giving attention, give some love, and sometimes that's what kids need.
Yeah.
In China, we've been teaching English to, several kids along the journey. I mean, we stopped in Xi'an and we did some project there. My wife, she's an artist, so in Beijing, back in Beijing, she's been developing these films, art films, for kids. So we've been filming, going to be in the internet, and the kids can actually get like English / art lessons. And We are planning now going to Vietnam, and in Vietnam we have already set up three beautiful projects, and two of them is around Hanoi, which is like work with kids and with local kids, teach them English, teach them some skills so they can actually get a better job. And in middle Vietnam, we're going to be working with this guy in Da Nang. And basically this guy, he had an accident years ago, and he got paralyzed from the chest down.
Okay.
And the way he deal with the situation, he actually moved out of his parents' house, and then he gets like his own place, and now it's like a place to help kids with disabilities. So we have like loads of kids there learning English and learning different skills, and you know, being motivated, self-motivation to, you know, keep alive even with a disability. So we had the chance to contact this guy, and we were invited to live there for at least a month and develop, so like, you know, English seminars and the projects, and the try, you know, improve their life in a way, you know, sharing our skills. In Cambodia, we also got to like a nice invitation. We're going to be for 3 months living this natural reserve. It's an island in south of Cambodia, and there's going to be doing an eco project with animals and with the beach, so like for 3 months. So the idea of the Planet Hero since the beginning was not just traveling, but also try help a bit, try make a little different in people's life. We are very lucky, my wife and I, you know, with the family we had and all the opportunities we have. I'm originally from Brazil, for people who actually couldn't understand my accent. And I moved to England, you know, 10 years ago. And we both been blessed by so many opportunities. And is that the way we see to maybe paying back? So we got so, like a kind of a bit, no, I wouldn't say sad, but a bit so, like difficult time of our life, and try to convert that into something good.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic. It sounds like you guys are doing a lot. You're going to do a lot of good in this world, and mix that in with having fun in between with your travels.
Sure.
Sounds like a great idea. And maybe make some money along the way. Are you guys working while you're traveling too?
We are not working. Basically, it's like we both like gave up our jobs back in London. We sold everything we had back in London. We invest in this project. So the way we thought we could, I wouldn't say making money, as like our idea was never making money, because I think when you say making money, it's like making profit and you know, accumulating money. But sometimes you need to make money to pay your bills and keep traveling.
To pay for your trip.
Exactly.
Is really
we
what
do
I was referring
want to extend
to.
The project. Basically, we have like a budget for 1 year developing this project, which we believe and we are really passionate about. And we obviously want to extend this trip for not just 1 year, but you know, for 2 years or maybe even 3 years, and maybe even doing Africa in the future. So it's like the way we thought we could actually make that project real and extend this chance, this opportunity for more kids and more people, was making films. So we are traveling actually with two cameras and also a drone. So we're making beautiful aerial footage. We are editing. We're also taking pictures. So in our website, we are feeding the website not just with a still image, but also with some videos, which I'm about to start to edit. It's a lot of footage so far done. We have 1.5 terabytes of footage to see it in the editor. But the idea is like tell a little YouTube channel projects, like 5 minutes programs, and telling not just about our trip, but the work we are developing. I think the idea is actually to not just to have followers and in the future have like a sponsor, but also to try achieve more people and try, you know, be an example for more people. Maybe it's like, you know, if you're showing to more people, we are trying to help, more people will get like stimulated to doing the good as well. We are trying to spread the love, if you know what I mean. Okay, it sounds a little bit cheesy, actually.
Well, yeah,
we are spreading the love.
It sounds great, spreading the love. So, yeah, I watched you guys do a couple of flights with your drone. I mean, this is not like the cheapo drone that you get at Walmart or whatever that you control with your phone or something. This is like high tech stuff.
Yeah, we do actually invest. I did a massive research when we decided back in London we would be traveling with a drone. I thought, okay, if I travel with the drone, there need be proper footage. I don't want to, I mean, I work with film for the past 15 years, and I do have a very criticized eyes for footage and for some plans and some shooting. So I thought, so, okay, we can spend very little money and get some rubbish drawn and very light and very small, but are we going to end up not using the footage, or we actually can invest in the drone and get something we can actually get a very nice footage, very stable, very high quality, and, you know, yeah, and actually give you guys an extra mile in our films. So we end up, so like, you know, investing in the new drone. It's not easy then, I must be honest. It's like, it's quite heavy. You know, you have like all day the drone in your back, and sometimes the end of the day, you have used the drone once or twice.
Right.
But once you get back in the, you know, hostel, and we check in like the footage, we always think like, wow, that actually was worth it.
So you're happy with it?
You're very happy with it.
It's cool. You know?
And but it's not an easy task to travel with a drone. To be honest, actually, we had in our first month traveling, we are crossing Siberia, and we stop in the Baikal Lake, which is a beautiful place. It's like Baikal is actually the deepest lake in the world. It can reach 1,600 meters depth.
It's crazy,
it's,
man.
Like crazy.
I remember reading it has so much water in it. It could swallow all of the Great Lakes.
Yeah, exactly.
Lake Superior has more surface area, but Baikal has more volume by
it's
far.
It's more volume by far. Yeah. It's actually one third of the all fresh water in the world.
In the world.
Oh, it's crazy. And it's also the clearest lake in the world. So the visibility is like under the water, it can reach over 40 meters.
Wow.
So it's very clear. It's very, very awesome. And so we got there, and, you know, obviously I was very excited about, so like, you know, such beautiful landscape in Siberia. So I made several flights, and, you know, over 5 days. And in our last day, actually, I was flying, and it was the end of the battery. And there was a little bit of my mistake as well. It's like I always try and fly back and land the drone before the drone get in the landing mode. Basically, when the battery gets flat, instead of the drone just fall, he fly back to where it took off and landed by itself.
Ah, see, it's that smart.
It's
that it
a GPS navigation stuff. But I normally, just for security, I always try, you know, fly back before.
Sure.
But I didn't have my monitor with me, which means like didn't have the battery percentage like going on. So I was flying a little bit blind. I was timing. But obviously, I did the wrong timing, and I was in the lake, I was in the shore, and the drone was like very far in the lake, and the battery got so like in the landing mode, and I think there was a bit of, or to say, it's a magnetic field error, which like mess up with the drone compass. So instead of the drone flying back to me, he flew like more towards the middle of the lake.
Oh, no.
And I saw the drone is slowly landing in the middle of the lake. I was like, wow, that's like, it's an investment, right? It's like drone
and
is not easy.
This thing,
and my camera is like, my GoPro is actually on top of that. So I watched the drone going very slowly, you know, landing in the middle of Baikal Lake. I remember like my first instinct was like take off my clothes and just, you know, jump in the lake and swim, but I didn't realize the drone was getting further and further, so I couldn't swim, you know, that distance. And the thing is, the consideration that was like, you know, in Siberia, and it was beginning of the winter, so we're talking about like a water close to 0 degrees.
Yeah,
so that wouldn't be a very smart idea if I had jumped in the lake to swim. So I remember running on shore and the jump, so like in this guy's speedboat, and even though I can't speak Russian at all, I was like doing some poor language and the show him is like, I need to go in there, go, and somehow he understood me, so he's like, you know, get his boat and going very fast in the middle of the lake. We keep so like, you know, going around and around trying to find the drone. I did found a piece of foam who come up from the drone, but foam is a protective thing for the drone legs, and obviously the drone sunk to the middle of the lake.
Was it still clear? Could you still see it?
No, I think it was like too late. It sunk quite quickly. I think the drone's a little bit heavy, and with the camera, and it just like sunk completely. And
so if you If you want a free drone, go out to Lake Baikal.
Going out to Lake
somewhere 1,000 meters deep. You can find it.
The way I like to see it, so like the locals in Baikal Lake normally say, if you throw some coins to Baikal Lake, they're going to bring you some luck. So I threw a drone there, you know, hopefully you'll get a lot of luck.
That's like a giant golden coin.
Exactly, you know what I mean?
That's not a penny.
Exactly. And the thing is, I was a little bit worried, obviously, when you left London. We insured everything, all the equipment. So, like, we're traveling with cameras, computers, and even our mobiles and iPads is, like, actually insured. And obviously, I did also insure the drone and my camera. But there was, like, one line on my insured. And the guy actually, when I signed up for the insurance, he was very clear about it. He said, so, like, your drone is insured for theft or for damage. So if you crash your drone, and if you just like put all the pieces together into like the bucket and bring the bucket back, we will pay you back. Or if someone's like steal from you or rob you, and you go into the police station, gets like the police
report.
The report, yeah. We're also going to insure you. But if you lose your drone, there is nothing we can do for you. So I had that in mind, and so it's like, damn it, we lost the drone and camera. There was like £1,000 investment almost. It's like a lot of money. And I have insurance, but they probably not going to pay me off. But so what I did, I said, like, can I say, worst case scenario, they're going to say no, but I must try, you know. So sure, I went back to the beach, and, you know, there was obviously, like, that day was a sunny day, so not actually the beach, but the lake shore was kind of full. So with my broken Russia, I managed to get, like, witness contact numbers and passport numbers and emails, and I put all those witnesses together. My wife took a
witnesses.
Picture. Yeah, witnesses, saying what happened.
Well, I was thinking they witnessed the lake stealing your drone.
Exactly,
right?
Kind of. That's what I thought. Yeah, I since stolen. The beginning, obviously, we never thought about a lie to the insurance or anything. We would never do such a thing. But we thought, so, like, we, you know, even though they told me that before, I'm going to try, you know, so apply for saying what happens. And so I wrote back to the insurers. I explained everything what happens. And my wife took a picture of me at the exactly moment I realized the drone would start crashing water. So my face was a little bit, disfigured face.
I can imagine.
Yeah. And we put together all the witnesses as well, the contact numbers, and we sent to them. And that was the last day in Baikal, and we just say, okay, now we need to wait and cross fingers.
You've done your job at that point.
We've done my job at that point. There's nothing I can do now.
Yeah.
So we got in Mongolia, in Ulaanbaatar, the capital of Mongolia, and basically when I come up with the idea to buy a drone for this trip, so like the main place I had in mind was like using a drone in Mongolia, in Gobi Desert. That would be awesome.
Right.
So I was so looking forward to actually get some aerial footage in the middle of Mongolia. And getting Mongolia without my drone, just with an empty backpack, was a little bit disappointing.
Oh, it's so sad.
It was very sad. And we arrived in Mongolia on Monday morning. And on Tuesday morning, the next day, we are getting like this, going to the desert for 10 days. And my wife and I was talking, thinking, and I start to, you know, we are here, we came for a reason. I'm not going to let that situation put us down or change our plans. We actually bought another drone, even not getting the answer from the insurers.
Oh, they had them for sale there?
They had for sale. I found like one shop in whole Mongolia selling, and it's the people from the Hobbs on, actually a very nice guy, and we got there at 8 o'clock in the evening on Monday. I contacted him by phone number, and we got there, and I had exactly the drone I actually needed. It was a better drone than I had. I mean, it was the one version up.
Okay.
So I had much better stabilization, much better control of the camera.
Well, most
was
importantly,
a brand new.
Would it fly back to you?
And that would fly back to me.
Yeah.
Hopefully that was like, I wouldn't have a problem. It's like in my mind to say it's a bit of investment, but luckily the drone in Mongolia actually was much cheaper than in London.
Okay.
So I thought, you know what? We are here. We are in the game. Fuck it. Let's do it.
Get a new one.
Let's get a new one. I want a drone for Mongolia. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
And so we got another drone, and we depart to the desert the next day with a brand new drone. And I didn't get a camera at the time, another camera, so I was using my other GoPro Hero 4. And but this drone was a nice one, brand new one, and I could actually was compatible with my GoPro Hero 4. And that was awesome. We get so many footage in Mongolia, which actually that was absolutely worth it. And 5 days after we depart to Mongolia, and I managed to get a little bit of internet in one place in the middle of nowhere. And I got an email from the insurance company, and the email they're saying, we are glad to inform you that your application was approved and we will give you another drone. So
nice.
Yeah. So like they put the money in my account from London, because I was in London, so they actually have two options. They could buy a drone for me, but because I wasn't there, they could just put the money in my account. So they paid for the drone, and everything worked out very well. And I ended up getting a better drone with better stabilization, everything. So I think it's like when, you know, I do believe in karma somehow, and I do believe when you're doing something good, you know, it's like the universe kind of help you back, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I found out the hard way about negative karma, though, the other day.
Your 28 hours journey.
Yeah, the way to Yangshuo, I was in the train station, and this Chinese guy was really drunk, just hammered, and he was kind of slobbering all over me, and we were having fun, though, and he was just talking and talking, and I was kind of, you know, having a good time, and suddenly his friend came up to him. Like, went, what's going on? Hey, we have to go. And it turned out their train was leaving. And the guy was so drunk that he missed his train. And he had to buy a new ticket. And unfortunately, I laughed at him. And then the next day, I had this, like, 28-hour odyssey that should have taken about 12 hours. And it was just kind of payback. I'm convinced.
I mean, make clear for everyone that actually I get the same journey, exactly the same journey. We are both together in Zhangjiajie,
right?
But my journey took me 12 hours. I actually left the same time as him, but one day before, and I got here by 10 o'clock in the morning.
10 in the morning.
Yeah. And you got here by 11 p.m.
Oh, like 10 or 11 at night. Yeah. Yeah.
So just 12 hours less, at least.
So never laugh at a drunk guy when he misses his train.
Actually, there is an expression in Brazil saying, it's like normally drunk people has a very strong saint look after them. You know, it's like an angel look after them. So if you take a mic out of drunk people, they protect, angel will pay back, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing bad. Well, they never seem to get hurt when they're out and about doing foolish things.
Exactly. You know, that's like a very powerful, you know,
it is
angel.
It is, man.
Sure. And so it's like we end up going to Mongolia with the camera, which was amazing. We got so many nice footage going on. We are really looking forward now to spend some time and edit all and start to upload our website. By the way, our website is www.theplanethero.com. And we also have a Facebook page, which is Planet Hero. Mm-hmm. We've been so far posting a lot of Facebook pictures, and I've been doing also some little videos with my phone just to feed the page on the Facebook. Now in Vietnam, because we're going to spend 3 months there, we will have plenty of time to update our website.
That's the problem.
Share with a little bit of people what we've been doing and the amazing things we've been seeing and the amazing people we've been helping. It's really funny actually saying about that. I mean, when you first start to think about this project, you know, Planet Hero, the idea was to help people. But it's funny sometimes when you actually feel people help you more than actually helping them.
Oh, absolutely.
You're going to doing those projects, and it changes you completely, the way you see life, and you realize, I'm here to supposed to help these kids, but it's another way around. They are helping me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have so much satisfaction on there. So much, you know, you get so happy. And I was like, sharing one of the moments. We are in Russia, in Moscow, developing this project I told you about with the handmade charity with kids of Down syndrome. And one little girl, you know, as soon as she got in this place, we are developing this party, cookie making party with kids, where the kids was making their own cookie dolls and you know, putting the oval with different shapes. This little girl just, you know, ran across the room and gave me a very big hug, and it just like the tears came out of my eyes, and was such a special moment.
Yeah.
And you know, it was so pure and so innocent and so, you know, pure love.
Yeah, it's so cool when that stuff
happens.
It's
so cool. It was like, it was awesome. It was awesome. I also had a very nice footage, one of my favorite footage, actually. I was we are in Gobi Desert, and been hiking, we've been riding a horse for 2 days, and we arrived in this, like, nomad family in the middle of nowhere, literally in the middle of nowhere. It was like beautiful place, and was a big family, and they have kids around, and you know, first thing in the morning after, you know, it's like a long day, we decided, like, okay, I'm gonna fly the drone here, you know, let's get some image from the top. Yeah. And those two kids came along, and they start to play with us and play with the drone. And I get this footage where the drone is flying backwards, and the kids are running, trying to catch the drone. And the kid gets very, very close. And after he gets, like, I'm not joking, less than a meter close from the camera, the drone just, like, flew very high and get this massive panoramic view. And the kids were so happy. And it's so nice to see kids in those places, actually being kids. I came from a generation that's like, I never had a video game when I was a kid. I'm from Rio de Janeiro. I grew up like in the suburbs of Rio. And we had a true childhood. We didn't have, you know, computer games or phones or video games. We had
what did you ever do? How could you possibly survive?
Exactly. We're doing like something really popular by the time. Play. Just play as a kid. We ride bikes, we playing peekaboo. It's not peekaboo, it's like when you hide and
hide and
seek. We played, like, we had, you know, we use our imagination. My grandparents came from the farm, and I remember spending, like, you know, whole holidays in the farm, and we just play as a kid with no technology behind. And going to those places in Mongolia just reminded me somehow a bit of my childhood, where, like, there was no technology, no electricity, nothing around, and he just kids playing, and that they make their own games, and that they use the imagination incredibly well to develop these, like, their own understanding games, and they're having so much fun. I mean, obviously, we got to a certain point, the kids actually was playing with a sheep shit. And the horse shit was like those hard horse shit that free up.
Yeah.
All right, I haven't played with shit when my childhood. If they're having fun, that was matters, right?
Yeah, in Wisconsin, where I grew up, we have these tournaments or games, I guess, where who can throw the shit the farthest. We call them cow pies. Cow pie throwing contest.
I'm guessing the kids are actually having the same game.
Yeah, probably.
They're like the shit very high.
And, I was going to say, though, it's, you think everyone in other cultures, like, people are going to be so different. And then you go, and especially with the kids, like, there are some differences, but mostly it's all the same.
It's humans so the same.
All over the world.
All over the world is the same. And I'm really impressed that to find out, especially with kids, there is no such a thing as a language barrier. It's incredible how you communicate with the kids just by a big smile on your face you know, showing them love and attention. I mean, I spent my birthday in Gobi Desert. Actually, it was like a mid-Mongolia, it was central Mongolia. And we are in this family, this nomad family. And was my third, fourth birthday. And wow, it was best birthday ever. We got in this family. The guy was preparing a homemade vodka. He doing that like once a month. They're doing the vodka with a cow milk. And so we got inside the gear, and there was like this very strong smell. And the guys are like, from the beginning, you know, the father of the family, he welcomed us with his arms open and with like some hot homemade vodka. And we start to play with the kids, and the kids are amazing. And when one of the kids find out it was actually my birthday, the kids like came in the corner of the room, and he started to draw a picture for me, and they gave me as a present. And and then he came to like also, you know, in Mongolia it's really common these bone games. It basically is a sheep bones, is ankle bones, okay. And they polish the bones and make kind of dice. And they have several games with these ankle bones from sheep and from other animals. And this little boy just came with his ankle bones games and gave to me as a present. And he insisted me to have it.
Whoa,
and
that
was
cool.
His toy. And you know, he just want to share. I was very touched, I must be honest. Yeah. I was like, we felt at home, and the amount of love was in that tent that night was like, was incredible.
Well, did you keep the bone?
I kept the bone.
You
I had
have
it with me. Oh, yeah, obviously. I'm going to keep forever. Yeah,
yeah,
we'll
for
keep
sure.
forever. And it's amazing. And the father, he went like, you know, to his, because the gear, it's an open area, you know, it's a tent, right? There is no rooms, no walls or anything. So the father actually stand up, and he went to the corner, and he got me this kind of a dagger, this kind of knife, but it was like with bones, and it's very Mongolian. And the guy said it's like he had there for very, very, very long time. Oh. And he gave to me as a present.
Whoa,
and I was
really?
Like, I can't accept that. That's looks awesome, looks beautiful, and it's yours. I just can't take it. And the guy, I insist, and obviously he's speaking his own language. We had the help of someone who actually was translating,
okay.
But the guy really insisted me to have it, and I have with me, and it's going to be something I'm going to keep for the rest of my life.
Yeah, what about border crossings, though?
So far, I haven't had any problem.
Okay.
I try and send that back to London by post in Mongolian, but they didn't accept it because it was a knife. They said by post, I can't send it. Oh. But so far, it's been fine. I hope so, like I'm not going to have any problem. I'm waiting someone meet me along the way, my family or someone from London, and maybe they can take it back and look after for
me. Oh, I hope so.
Until I come back.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. It's a very nice, very, very nice people with a very big heart. And there for me was like, it's a birthday I will remember forever.
Wow, it's so cool. I mean, I've felt such generosity too in this world. It's really cool to discover what people are willing to do to help fellow humans.
It's amazing. I think it's like, you know, we are living now, it's a very difficult world, and you know, we have so many horrible events happening in the past, not very long time ago. I mean, it's like even just a few weeks ago, all the terrorism and all the war and all the going to places like Mongolia or China or even Russia, you know, it's like not obviously only the capital, but, you know, the Ural Mountains and Siberia. It just like restored me the faith in the humanity because we met so many people who actually want to help. And to be honest, yes, we do have bad people there. Yes, we do have people going to try scanning you and, you know, get money for you. But 99% of the people are actually truly good people.
Yeah.
I do believe they want to help somehow. And I remember we are in Mongolia in the jeep going one place, crossing the desert. And the driver sometimes just like stop randomly in one gear, in one nomad family, and he just stopped the car. Hi, can you have a tea? And this family, who is never saw before, never had contact before, stopped what they're doing, invite us inside the gear, and offer us some milk tea, you know, the camel milk tea. or fermented chamomile tea or horse milk tea, which is kind of fermented, a little bit of alcohol in there. And it was truly just like sharing this bowl with them. It's one bowl going around, and you had like a sip of fermented horse milk, and you had these goat cheese snacks, which they made by themselves, very strong flavor, and you spent hours there just chatting, and they never saw you before. They welcome to your place.
Do they speak English?
No, I mean, it's like they don't speak English. Luckily, we had the driver who actually speak.
Oh, you had a guy.
Yeah, we had a guy, someone translating. So we actually could spend time and talk with them. And I've been recording a video, so I could actually do a bit of interview in their language. It's like, you know, about life, about what they see.
Oh, that's so cool.
And it's amazing. But I was very surprised to how people are very good. Good heart people, you know, they try help, they try share. Yeah. It's funny how people who has very little are sharing everything they have.
Oh, they're so generous.
It's so generous. Yeah. And sometimes you're going to people who had a lot.
Yep.
And they're not going to offer you a glass of water.
Yeah, nothing. Even if it's free, they're afraid that you're going to steal all their stuff or something. Yeah,
I mean, that would never happen in the Western world. You just knock the door of someone and they say, can I have a tea with you? And you welcome that stranger into your house and they share a tea. And, you know, that just don't happen.
Nah, I wouldn't say not in the Western world. I mean, I had in Australia, actually. I was just walking around and just a short story. A guy just pulled right up next to me and he said, hey, you want a ride? I said, And I was kind of had to think about it, like, well, what's this guy up to? You know, is he honest? Is he genuine?
Yeah.
And he had this really old beat up car and like junk in it, and I just kind of said, yeah, okay. The buses weren't running anymore. I was in this little town. I probably had to walk, you know, 45 minutes to get to this campsite I was going to. I said, well, I'm going to this campsite. I said, yeah, I'll take you there, no problem. And he did. And he, along the way, he just said, you know what? He was Australian, of course. He said, you know what? I've traveled in the west coast of the U.S. I hitchhiked everywhere. I had no trouble getting a ride. I met some amazing people. They were super generous with me. And I just like to return the favor now with other travelers, maybe not with the same people. But it's like, it's cool. This still exists in the Western world, but among,
it does. Yeah, it
not
does.
Among people.
It's not normal thing to happen.
No, it's not a normal thing.
Yeah, I
right.
agree. I do actually think sometimes I'm just like people, I'm getting back what I actually, you know, what I did in the past. I mean, it's like I had the stories like in the past, especially living in London, which is a very expensive city. And so many people who actually I didn't know was a friend of a friend.
Yeah.
He was going to London and say, I need help. And, you know, end up staying in my place and end up showing them around. I actually, that was very common for me. And I think that's the way the universe pay me back in the way. I don't want to, you know, but it's been great. All my experience so far, me and my wife, is being absolutely amazing. There was no moment at all that I felt like under threat or under danger. I was like always feel very safe. And you know, remind you, I'm traveling with a lot of cameras and equipment.
Oh, a lot of money invested.
Sometimes,
in it.
It is a kind of, you know, you take you get high in the spotlight when you're walking around the station, the city, with so many bags around you.
Yeah,
I never felt like in a threat. I never felt like in dangers at all. And it's been a blast. It's been great. And
For sure.
The world is just being, you know, it's being very generous with me.
Yeah, that's the other kind of big misconception I think we have a lot in the Western world. It's just that we think the world is so dangerous. And I mean, yeah, there's some dangerous spots, of course, but the stuff you see on the news, it's really pretty isolated.
It is. I agree. I think it's like sometimes the news, the media actually focus on the... Because like, you know, bad stories actually sell more than good stories. So you have so much focus in the tragedies and the killing and the violence and the, you know, and the media get quite very focused on that. And the idea of most of the people get is that, like, we live in very dangerous world.
Yeah, of
course. We need to lock ourselves inside our own room and don't leave. But actually, it's another way around. It's like, it's been so safe so far. I'm repeating what I said like before. In my opinion, 90% of the people in the world, they're actually very good people. They just want to help.
Yeah.
Very honest and the very good people.
Of course. You know? But of course, the thing is, like, on the news, if a news company put on, like, a story that said, well, this guy went on vacation for a month and nothing bad happened and he had a really good time. Like, yeah. That's, no one cares. No one's going to watch that.
No,
their viewership will plummet.
That's not going to sell.
They have to report all the crazy stuff that's happening.
They do. They don't actually sell good news, you know.
Yeah.
They don't sell a guy who actually... News for today. Today we had this guy who helped two travelers to cross the river.
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to be a seller. You know?
Nah,
but if you say the river actually crashed, killing like hundreds of people with like a bomb guy, wow, we're going to sell thousands and thousands. So it's like it's making the world worse than actually it is. The world is a very beautiful place with a very beautiful people.
Yeah,
that's the way
absolutely.
I like to see and, you know.
And this is coming from someone from Rio, which is well known as this dangerous spot, too.
Exactly. Yeah. Even in Rio, I spent like all my life in suburbs of Rio, and I haven't done anything to like for my safety. I mean, what I'm saying is like even being from Rio, I always felt very safe. I mean, I always went to everywhere I want to. I always, like, you know, party until whenever I want. I have loads of friends from favelas, so it's like I was constantly going in and out of favelas to visit friends. And
favelas being the slums.
The slums. Right. The slums, so I was like constantly going in and out, so like to see family, to see friends, and you know, I should be honest, the best party you can go in Rio is inside the favelas, because the communities, once again, we do have the drug dealers there and the criminals, but it's less than 1% of the people from the favela. Yeah. 99.9% of the people actually are good, honest people who work very hard and they want the good. So you go into their house, it's like they're going to welcome in their place, they're going to share their food with you, they're going to make you feel home in within 5 minutes. And being from Rio, it's like I always experience all that, and I'm proud to say nothing bad never happened to me. My wife is from England. She's a Londoner, and she's been in Rio several times with me. I always take her everywhere. And, you know, once again, nothing bad ever happened. And, you know, my wife is actually English, and she does look like an English.
You know? Oh, yeah.
She's, like, you know, very white with a ginger hair and blue eyes.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's not very, you know... Everyone in Rio could tell she's a gringa, you know, she's foreign, you know. But she never felt like under threat either. She never felt like, you know, she was in danger at any time. Even then when it were parties, like, you know, going to someone else's party at 3 o'clock in the morning in the border of a favela, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I do like to believe that, as I said, 99.9% of the people in the world are very good people. You know, I like to trust people. And, you know, I've been lucky so far. No one ever actually broke that trust.
Awesome. So we ought to wrap it up now. We got dinner coming up for you in a couple of minutes.
Yeah, sure. We could be talking for the next...
Oh, this could go on forever. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. Forever.
Absolutely.
Ever.
But, yeah, keep in mind, guys, if you never traveled anywhere... Don't believe the news. Most of the world is safe.
Most importantly, don't change your plans. Don't give up your dreams just because you're scared of the media tell you. Yeah. Be always courageous to actually follow your dreams. And it's never late. I'm not young anymore. My wife is not that young anymore. We are not teenagers, which like have this adventure spirit and just go. We actually had a very stable life in London, and was never late to give up everything. And you know, job in the end is just a job. At any time going back to London, I'm gonna get another one, and nothing gonna change. And so never give up your dreams, and never think it's too late to actually doing what you love to. You know, always doing what your heart is asking you to do. that's the important thing ever.
Awesome. Well, this has been a really great inspirational talk with you. I'm really glad to have gotten some time to do it. And yeah, thanks for coming on. The website again, theplanethero.com. And yes. I will put a link to that in the show notes so you guys can just click on it.
Yes, and the Facebook, we have the page on Facebook, the Planet Hero.
Perfect. I'll put that link out there too.
Fantastic. And thank you very much for inviting me. Actually, it was a very nice chat. It was very nice to share with you and with all your audience, like a little bit of our stories. We maybe a year time we will, you know, bump into each other again. Someone else in the world, and gonna do another one with kind of, you know, a year later.
Absolutely, we can do a catch up and see what you've been up to. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Yep. Bye, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information, you can visit my website. 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. From there, you can sign up to get updates from this podcast delivered directly to your inbox. Remember, the Around the World podcast is all about meeting ordinary people who have done extraordinary things. Thanks for listening.